Washington, D.C., and PRI, Public Radio International, this is Breaking Ground, a documentary series dedicated to unearthing stories you don't hear elsewhere. I'm Kavita Cardoza. Today we've been talking about our nation's military children, and in this segment, we'll hear from a few of the approximately 5,000 who've lost a parent or older sibling in the past decade. The organization TAPS stands for Tragedy Assistance Program for Survivors. TAPS holds good grief camps around the country where young people are taught they're not alone in their sadness. I spent some time at a camp in Philadelphia. This could be any room of 5 to 7-year-olds until you look at the pictures they're drawing. 6-year-old Grayson Garber is from New York. His father Richard was serving in the Navy when he died in 2011. Tell me about your picture.
This is my dad watching TV, and this is a graveyard.
He's watching TV in the graveyard?
Yeah.
Tell me a little bit about him. I've never met him.
His name is Richard. He was in the Navy. He got hit by a bomb, and also a big missile hit him.
Catherine Clark is sitting next to Grayson, furiously coloring with blue around a winged figure. She's 5 and a half.
My dad's an angel, and he's about to swim in Hawaii.
Have you been to Hawaii with your dad?
Yes. It was hot.
Did he splash you?
Yeah. Yes. He likes to tickle people.
And what would you do?
I would tickle him back.
Catherine's father, Kevin, died in Afghanistan in 2012. Dylan Bayless is 8. He's written his name on a bright yellow star, and right next to it is the name David. That's his stepfather, who died in combat in Afghanistan in 2009. Can you read what you've written?
Dear David, I miss you so much. I want you to come back, please. I really didn't want him to die, and I said, don't go out there because you're going to die, and he didn't listen.
For teenagers, this TAPS camp can be calming as they deal with loss during an already difficult age. 14-year-old Madison Cheever says this is the only place she can talk about her dad, Rob, as much as she wants.
You don't have to worry about, oh, what if someone makes fun of me?
Just 3 days after Sergeant First Class Robert Cheever returned to the U.S. after his third tour of duty in Afghanistan, he had a stroke. When his family was told he wouldn't recover, they moved from an army base in New York to Minnesota, where Rob's family lived. His wife, Jill Bailey, says her children's sorrow was compounded by leaving the only home they had ever known.
Even though we have moved back to the Midwest to our family, they're all civilians. It was culture shock.
Rob Cheever died a month later. He was 37. Now his daughter Madison says she can't relate to other children in school.
They're like, oh yeah, I lost a grandparent. They don't know how it feels to lose someone who would possibly walk you down the aisle someday.
Cheva says she's filled 2 or 3 journals with letters she's written to her dad because she's sure he reads them.
Because then I still can remember him and he's not slowly fading away and just being a memory.
She says when they visit his grave, she sits down and talks to him.
Until my mom finally says we need to go. She says that I'm definitely his child who's always talking and never stops.
Back in the children's group, Grayson Garber is waiting for the next activity to start. I ask about the stress ball he's just made out of balloons and Play-Doh. It's meant to help him cope with anger.
Grayson, what do you usually do when you get angry at home, before you had your stress ball?
Wrestle my brother.
And now what are you going to do?
I'm going to throw it at Aiden.
You're going to throw your stress ball at your brother now? I think you're supposed to squeeze it.
I love
that. Nice.
Vanessa Daly at TAPS listens as children share what they've learned at camp.
Even somebody died in your family, you can still have fun.
You can share your feelings that you never shared with people.
You guys are really, really brave.
Daly herself lost her father 11 years ago when he was deployed in Iraq. She wants these children to know there are two paths they can take.
You can take that grief and you can hold it inside and it can be very negative. I just want the kids to see that there's another road, and that's the road that their parents would want them to take.
Since the start of the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan, approximately 3,000 service members have killed themselves. That doesn't include veterans or National Guard and Reserve troops not on active duty. The Department of Defense now considers suicide among the most important issues facing the military. For children, suicide is extremely difficult to understand because they want their loved one to be a hero, as in, how many people did my dad save? Or, did he jump on a bomb to save his buddies? Many blame themselves and feel responsible. 80 miles away from the TAPS camp in Joppa, Maryland, 7-year-old Connor Deal is sitting in his basement. He's balancing a large photo album on his lap. His mother, Susan, says he does this several times a month.
This is a picture of me. We have a wagon, and my dad used to pull me around in it. This is a uniform that Daddy used to wear.
Where's that?
Afghanistan. Oops, we skipped a page.
Daddy is Michael Deal, who served in a special tactics unit for the Air Force. Susan says they were both 23 when they met.
He would say, just tell people we met at a bar. But I say we met at a Christmas party because it was at a Christmas party at a bar. But we met that night and the rest was history.
He was a dashing and happy airman who jumped out of planes. She was a gorgeous and kind therapist in private practice. They fell in love instantly. During their 9 years as a couple, they were apart a lot because of Michael's job. Deployments to Iraq, Afghanistan, Kosovo, Kuwait, and constant trainings. In 2007, Michael got out of the military and transitioned into civilian life. But it didn't go the way he hoped.
He was only offered lower-paying positions, and he had all this special tactics training, but he didn't have a college degree. He thought his skills would be valued more than reality.
At around the same time, he was diagnosed with ADHD and depression. His doctor prescribed a variety of medications, including one he should not have been taking because of his family history of bipolar disorder.
He started changing then.
What do you mean changing?
He was very suspicious about everything, made accusations of me that weren't true.
Like you were having affairs.
Yeah, okay. All that stuff. And how do you tell somebody who's paranoid that they're paranoid?
One weekend, Susan and their children went to the beach. Michael stayed behind because of work and insisted he was fine, that they go and have fun.
And I got a call at 4:20 in the morning saying that he was dead.
Michael Deal was 33 years old. Connor says it's hard sometimes keeping his dad's death a secret.
Does your little brother ask you about him?
Yes. He asks how he died, but my mom doesn't want me to tell him, and I say, well, Mommy doesn't want me to tell you.
Did your friends ask you in school what happened?
I told my friends that he died, but I didn't tell him how he died because it was too violent. Do I tell you, like, how he died?
You can if you want.
He died because, like, his brain got messed up and he got mad a lot, and he accidentally shot himself.
I see Susan shaking her head, but Connor continues talking. He says when he thinks about his dad, sometimes he's happy, sometimes he's sad, and sometimes he's angry.
What do you feel angry about?
That he's not here, and I'm angry because that I can't play with him.
Susan says dealing with questions from Connor was the most difficult, and there were many questions.
But how did he die? And I gritted my teeth, you know, and basically said he took his own life. But how? And I said, with a gun, and he looked at me and he goes, he shot himself? Why? And I said, I don't know. I kind of explained that he had something wrong with his brain.
you know, the fact that he said to you that it was accidental, he knows that it's not. Michael was excellent marksman. He knew how to handle a weapon. There was nothing accidental about it.
That's just his way of
hoping, I think, yeah.
Since Michael died, Connor has begun sucking his thumb again and become more anxious.
Because we went to the beach. In their little minds, everything was fine, and we come home and Daddy's gone. That doesn't make any sense to anybody.
Connor is taking me through a closet door that opens into a smaller door, and you crawl through it into a tiny little room his father built for him.
Well, this is my fort that he made. It's very small.
I don't know whether I can fit in here. Oh my gosh.
You flip a switch and little stars come on. There are maps from Afghanistan pinned on the walls and a pint-sized cabinet where Connor keeps his prized possessions.
My dad gave me some of his stuff that he used to use for work.
What's
this
that?
Is the little pouch. He wrote Deal on it.
Cool. I love how he had written his last name on the pouch, and that's your last name too.
Yeah.
Connor's eyes sparkle with pride as he points out his father's helmet and books and citations.
I've never met your dad, right? And people are going to listen to this and they've never met your dad. So if you had to explain who your dad was, how would you do that?
He's very nice, and no matter what, he has time to play with me. He would tell jokes, and he would sometimes make funny faces.
He had a whole, I would say, 32 and a half really good years, and I don't want him to be remembered for the last moment in his life. I said Daddy would be very proud of you,
yeah,
right?
He's an angel.
He is an angel, right.
As Susan Deal cuddles Connor on the front porch of her house, she tries not to think of the many memories Michael won't be there to make with their sons. She's just got engaged and is trying to make way for future memories with her fiancé. It's a difficult balance.
When we're just driving along and it's a perfectly good day and you get asked, why isn't Daddy still here? It breaks your heart. But some days it's a beautiful day out and you just get to smile and live and be good. So it just depends on the day. Today's a good day.
The nation's 2 million military children are bearing a big burden. They've seen their parents head overseas and sometimes get hurt or killed. They've worried in silence and sometimes have grieved alone. All of that takes a toll. We say so often that these children are resilient, but I wonder if that's just a way to let ourselves off the hook for what we owe these kids. I started thinking of their sacrifices and the unpredictable nature of their lives. And I realize that even though they didn't sign up, these children have served too. Perhaps we should start by saying to them, as well as their parents, thank you for your service. You've been listening to Breaking Ground, Military Children. Our editors are Tara Boyle and Deborah George. Special thanks to Memo Lyons, Kevin Munson, Mark McDonald, and Kerry Needham. Also to Chris Chester, Kerry Moskal, Kathleen Allenbaugh, and the rest of the digital and marketing team. Also thanks to Noel Gunther and Robin Kaler, along with Liam Sullivan, Julie Alderman, and Andrew Katzmoses. Special thanks to PRI's Kathy Merritt and Vidal Guzman. For more of our reporting on military children, along with videos, slideshows, and resources on how to help, visit our website, breakingground.wamu.org. You can also share your story on Twitter at Kavita Cardoza. Thanks for listening. I'm Kavita Cardoza.
Partial support for education reporting on WAMU 88.5 comes from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.